starts an issue of Truma. So I think this is the first Aliyah like this that we've had this semester, possibly this whole year, probably this whole year. So it's kedai to point out, we usually have an opportunity to point this out around this time of year, around this parsha of Truma, Tetzaveh, and the like, and as we get into Vayikra. So, of course, it's a very different experience than what we've been doing till now, especially if we want to contrast it to last week. We were doing Mishpatim, and we had too many practical topics that we could discuss within the space of one day. And so many different inyanim in which we're holding in practically, happen to be holding in on the Tefta. So it's chock full of fascinating, relevant topics to talk about. When we get to parshios like this, and also parshios that deal more directly with the Karbanos in Vayikra, so it's obviously very different. But that's also a special opportunity for us, and a special opportunity for our one Aliyah at a time structure, because, first of all, it happens to be, particularly when it comes to Kachim, we'll discuss this a little bit, but in the absence of bringing the Karbanos, learning about the Karbanos is considered to be the way we replace it. So, especially because we're not practicing these concepts, to be able to learn these concepts is an important opportunity. And on top of that, there is so much abstract imagery that can be found within the Karbanos, and now in our Parshios can be found within the concept of the Mishkan and the structure of the Mishkan, and we tend not to pay much attention to it because, again, it's not something we actually deal with in our contemporary lives. So here, the relevance of these psukim hits us specifically through the study component and through the abstraction and conceptualization. So be able to take some time to pay closer attention to these details, which otherwise just kind of sail past us, is a special opportunity in of itself. And while, again, these shiurim will sound very different than they sounded previous weeks, but that's also an important opportunity, and I wanted to make sure that we fully appreciated this. In general, if you look around in Svarim, so you find less written about these aliyahs than you do, again, compared to, let's say, Mishpatim. Although not nothing, there is certainly enough. But particularly, we call your attention to the writings of Rav Chaim Shmuel Fall Hirsch. He always finds imagery to discuss within all of these details. And while I don't think I'm just going to read it out loud to you today, I maybe make a reference or two to it, but certainly if you're looking for something to read during these parshios to help you appreciate more what's going on and to help you find more of a sense of meaning in what's described in the Torah, I think you would get a lot out of reading his commentary on these psukim and these parshios. And this Aliyah, again, I won't mention him maybe a little bit, but this Aliyah is no exception. He has quite a lot to say about this Aliyah and all the similar Aliyahs. Okay, so with that, so let's start taking a look at the Chamishi of Truma. So the Torah tells us we're talking about the Paroches, about this Mechitza, this divider. In Aramaic they call it a Pargod. Can't Marsha, they call it a Pargod. This wall that they would put here for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Torah tells us, Yasisa Faroches Tcheles Yargaman B'Salat Shani B'Sheish Mashzar Masecho Shev Ya'aseosa Keruvim. So you should make this divider. It's out of all these different colors. It's blue and it's purple and it's red. And Sheish Mashzar, it's twined linen. Very skillful work. It's a Maisa Choshev. We'll talk in a moment what that means. And you will make it with Kruvim. So first of all, we said all these colors. So what does Tolos Shani really mean? So it's some kind of red. The Vilna Gaon has a comment here, which is interesting. We find this phrase a lot. But he comments that Tolos Shani, so there's a difference between red and Tola. So Tola is also a type of red. But it's very red. It's the first imprint that comes off the dye that's real red. That's a very stark red. And then when you cook it in water, it's a little bit a step removed from that. It's like second degree red. So that's what's called shani. So here, talas shani is red and a slightly lighter red. And it says that's pshat and the often quoted pasuk in Yeshaya, which is relevant to us because we're still in the winter season and snow is on our mind. It's interesting, I was just mentioning in my shul the past few weeks, we had a big snowstorm 2 weeks ago. So since then, in the afternoons, I was talking a little bit about the Ruth Evans classic essay about snow in the Or HaLacha. And there he talks about snow and halacha, all the various ramifications that it has. And he notes that snow is important in Torah for halachic reasons, but also for imagery reasons, and the color and the coldness are both invoked as having a powerful metaphorical effect. So this pasuk talks about snow. The pasuk says, "Miucha ta'echem kishanim kishela yalvina v'miyadimu katala kitzemriyu." So the Rambam Gaon says, you see that red tola is the starkest red, and shani is a little bit less. And Shaleg, as Rav Zevin was highlighting, is the whitest of the white. This is the pure white. And Tzemer, as wool, is a little bit less white than Shaleg. So what the Pasuk is saying is that you'll move up a level. And Yuchata'echim Kashanim, if your Chataim are kind of reddish, so then they can move up to perfect white. They will be completely whitewashed, so to speak, in the positive sense. But if they're a little brighter than that, so then they'll still improve, but then it's greater distance, so kitzamriyu, they'll be at least like wool. So the different connotations of the different phrases, it's an interesting observation of Vilna Gaon. So what does Matzah Choshev mean? So Matzah Choshev, literally it just sounds like it means the act of intelligence, the act of skill. So here Rashi says that you have two sides, and one side didn't look like the other. They had different images on each side. And later on, in our Aliyah, we'll find the phrase Masa Rokain, which is a work of embroidery, and there you find that both sides did look the same. So Nassim Gishtetner has an interesting comment in his Laharas Nassim, where he says, what's the idea of whether you'll have the same thing on both sides or different things on both sides? He says, really, ideally, you should have, kind of a funny comment, we'll see what we're going to do with it. He says, really, you should have the same thing on both sides, because we uphold the value of tofu kavaro, that we want that the outside should look like the inside. We call it consistency or integrity, and that's really the way things should be. But here, we're talking about the Aruch, so we're talking about Torah, so we know that Torah, the less funny part of it is that Torah is something that we should be tzanu about, we should be modest, so we don't want to necessarily advertise on the outside what's on the inside. The funnier part, sort of, is that he makes reference also to the fact that the Gemara says in Bar Metzia, we've discussed this Gemara a number of occasions, that we have a concept of being mishanim b'nei ha-shalom. We know that sometimes you can alter the truth for the sake of peace. So, related or distinct from that, the Gemara says in the second paragraph of Bava Tzia that there are certain areas where one can deviate from the actual reality for valid purposes. The Gemara has three valid purposes. So, the Gemara says there that this is something that Talmud Chacham could do. Apparently, this is a quality of somebody who's steeped in Torah and who's committed to honesty. But despite that commitment, it's legitimate sometimes to differ a little bit, to deviate a little bit. So that's perhaps represented here. The Aron is behind this curtain, which is one thing on the inside, nothing on the outside. That's a little bit of a funny point, because it kind of sounds like this value of Tocha Kavaro doesn't apply to Talmud Chachamim, which is certainly not the message we generally try to convey. But the part about the Tznius, and that the Torah should be the Tznius, I think that part we can hold on to a little bit more. The Lutzker Rav in his Zavnayim LaTorah, so he writes that the idea is that we have two different images on the different sides because we want the proper framing. We want the inside to always be inside, the outside to always be outside, and we don't want it to get switched, which is an interesting idea. That would make it comparable to the Atara you find in a talus. So what's the idea of having an Atara by the neck and the talus? So in some of the Svarim it explains that we believe that when somebody has the chazakah to do a mitzvah, so we allow them to continue the mitzvah. And it's not only people, it's also fabric. It's also sides of the fabric. So talis, you usually wear it a certain way. So we don't want it to look the same on both sides, so you can just flip it casually upside down, inside out, and no one will ever know the difference. So you should always wear it consistently. So the atara makes one out of the four possible sides now look different, so you know how not to wear it inside out, not to wear it upside down. So too, perhaps you have the same beda, this message being conveyed with the parochas as well. The idea of having the kruvim, having the images of children on it, so the Vilna Gaon suggests that the imagery is that a child has greater faith in God, somebody who grows up already begins to have more faith in himself as opposed to God. So we want the message around the aura to be a pure faith in God, so therefore the kruvim are appropriate for that. The Kliyakar notes also that in terms of the imagery, that since the Kodesh HaKadoshim is only used by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, which is a time when we are separated from all physicality, we're fasting, we're removed from anything Gashmius, so the message is that all that's left is the Machshav, is the Seichel. So therefore, this Maisa Choshev is supposed to connote the Machshava and the Kruvim also, again, the young, unspoiled children, all the imagery of being separated from Olam Hazeh, and that's what's supposed to give us the labeling for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, so then the Pesukim continue. V'nasata osa arba amudei shitim, mitzupim zav, aveyim zav, arba adni chesef. So you put all of this on four pillars of shitim wood that are covered in gold. Aveyim zav, their hooks are gold. That they're on four sockets of silver, and the symbolism of these pillars, and we'll come back to in a few minutes. But the next pasuk continues, "V'nasata es haparoches tachas hakrosim." So you'll put this paroches under the clasps, hang it up from the clasps. "V'heveso shama mi beis haparoches es aron ha'idus," and you should put in there inside of it the aron ha'idus. "V'hivdila haparoches lachem." Bein HaKodesh, Bein Kodesh HaKadoshim. And this paroches is now going to separate between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So here, this idea of kind of walling off the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Rav Soloveitchik in his drushes expanded on this idea, also connected to the concept of Tznius that we mentioned a few minutes ago. And he has a general mahalach, which he spoke about in many contexts, that emotions, the holier an emotion is, the more it needs to be concealed, the more it needs to be private. And he would talk about his family upbringing, about how his father would not be very emotionally open with him, but he loved him very dearly, but that this is a shita, that the emotion that's very holy is supposed to be inward, is supposed to be private. And he writes there that all people who would see his father would think that's pure brisker coldness, being detached from any emotion. And he was trying to emphasize that, no, it's not that there's no emotion, it's that the emotion is meant to be private, it's meant to be internal, and that's the imagery that he got out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim being closed off. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his commentary here, so he notes that the Gemara in Masech HaSchulim and that Chavav Medbeis trying to figure out whether it's appropriate, let's say, on Matzoi Shabbos that goes into Yontif. So when you make Havdalah, so should you say Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh or Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Chol? So the suggestion of Gemara there is it should be still Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Chol, because we're talking about Havdalos, about distinctions that are drawn in the Torah. And in the Torah, the only distinction that you find is from Kedusha and Chol and not from Kodesh and Kodesh. So asks Rabbi Yaakov, but what about this pasuk? So here the Torah tells us that we should make this distinction between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we do have a Havdal in the Torah between Kodesh and Kodesh. So he has two approaches there to address this. He says, here the Havdal is not between Kodesh and Kodesh, it's between different degrees of Kodesh. That you have Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh. So to insert that into our Havdalah would be an open zilzal of Yantif, that even though it's true, that we do consider Shabbos to be holier than Yontif, but incorporate that in the Havdalah and say, oh, thank you, God, now for separating us between the big Kedusha and the small Kedusha, that would be a zilzal to Yontif, and maybe that's what the Gemara means. But he also suggests that the Havdalahs that we talk about in Havdalah, so we don't mean actual physical Havdalah, we mean that they are inherently, in a spiritual sense, distinct. So here, the Torah is talking about physical Havdalah. We're talking about an actual curtain. So that's not relevant to the type of Havdalah, the greater thematic conceptual Havdalahs that we talk about, that we evoke in Havdalah. But Lamaisa, this distinction of, on the one hand, Kodesh, and then beyond that, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so the Ber Moshe was the Ajva Rebbe, so he notes that there is a symbolism here also just to the fact that Kedusha itself lends itself to different degrees and that it's not all equal. And that we find that by Talmidei Chachamim also, that there is a difference between one who is a Talmid Chacham on a basic level and one who is a Talmid Chacham on a more profound level. And that's also something that we seek out. It happens to slightly synergize what we've been talking about this past week. When we talk about a mumcha, a mumcha l'rabim, and a different kind of mumcha, it's the greatest mumcha. But he writes here, the Ber Moshe, that this was Korach's mistake. Korach said that ki kol ha'eda, kulam kedoshim, everyone's holy, so why is there any particular significance to Aaron, to Moshe? They're all Kodesh anyway, so once we are Kodesh, that's all you need. So the Torah is emphasizing, no, that even within Kedusha, we distinguish between Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it's true on all the levels. Hi.
Kind of like everyone is equal, but some are more equal than others.
If you want to quote George Orwell. So there, I think it's meant to be sent up as an irony. So here, I would not necessarily use that application, but the idea being that Kodesh is different from equality, although, you know, that phrase itself has so many packed meanings, I'm not even going to go there. So I'm going to say, no, kind of not like that. Or like that, but less like that than other things are like that. So, in any event, the Ramban and the Or HaChaim here both note that this order that's being described, that you set up the parochas and then you put the Aron in there, so that's not the actual order in which things happen. If you read in Parshas Pekudei, so it's different. It says here the Torah is not talking about the actual construction of the Mishkan. The Torah is describing the structure of the Mishkan. So therefore, there either is not a concern to make it precise in terms of order, or maybe that is the point, that we're just trying to explain how things are placed. So therefore, here we're establishing this divider and showing this divider will be between the Aron and other things, but it's not meant to suggest that this was the actual chronological order in which things are going to be placed in here. Rabbeinu Bechaya in this pasuk writes that the beged of the Kohen Gadol for Yom Kippur was also kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Paris Yosef asks that that's difficult because the Kodesh HaKadoshim was only entered by the Kohen Gadol at the right time, only on Yom Kippur. So how would he have the beged to be able to put it on when he needs to? And Rabbeinu Bechaya also writes that the Shemen HaMishkol was also kept there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And again, the question is, well, they needed to use the Shemen HaMishkol from time to time, and how are they going to get it? Some suggest maybe it wasn't all of it there, some of it was there, but if all was there, so how would they get to it? The Rambam, Hilchos Beis HaBechira in Perek Dalet Halacha Aleph, so he describes that there was a rock inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim that the Evan was on top of, and in front of that was the Tzimtzenes Haman and the Mat Aron. Number of Svarim were kept in the Aron to be used. No, these are the bases. They are Svarim by these names, but they weren't the actual Svarim. My Bama High School once asked, you know, what's the only Sefer that Moshe Rabbeinu brought with him from the Mitzrayim? And so it was the Atzmus Yosef, so Sefer and Kedushin. But so here, not referring to the Svarim called Tzenes Haman and the Mat Aron, but the actual Tzenes Haman and the Mat Aron were kept there in front of the Aron. So the Rambam doesn't say the Shemen. So the Shemen, which they needed to use, so how did they get to it if they only could get in there on Yom Kippur? So the Paris Yosef quotes from Midrashim, the big Chiddush, is actually the Kohen Gadol could get there could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim at any day. He had to do it like in Kippur. He had to then go through the Seder of the Kippur in order to enter, which is a interesting Kiddush. Just tangentially, when the Rambam describes this, and he goes on to say that there was a secret place for the Aron to hide that Shlomo built in the Beis HaMikdash, a secret place for the Aron to hide, and that was there for a time of Sakana. Slobavitcher Rebbe, Shlomo Bracha, has a whole sicha about this, and sichas that were recently published in a easier to access edition, where he, referring to the fact that if you want to read the sicha Slobavitcher Rebbe, so it's a zillion volumes, but a few years ago they published, probably available to farm sale, they published a set, a beautifully done set, where they have, for every parasha, three of the sichas. Gets a little more manageably. So one of the three sichos in that set, he talks about why the Rambam has to include this in the space of the Chira, this whole history about Shlomo, and he suggests it's not just about security, it's that the Aron has a overt presence in the Beis HaMikdash and also has a hidden presence in the Beis HaMikdash, and that's a part of the structure. And therefore, in the later Beis HaMikdash, when the Aron wasn't present, the answer is it is present, because it's there beneath, and that counts, that's the hidden place of the Aron, and that the second Beis HaMikdash and God willing the third Beis HaMikdash are not separate constructs. It's all a rebuilding of the same Beis HaMikdash in the same place. So the Aron that's there from the beginning now is in its hidden place. So then that's also a part even of the second Beis HaMikdash and in the future. So we'll tell that to Indiana Jones. Okay, so then the pasuk continues. V'nasa'ates ha'kapores al aron ha'idus v'kodesh ha'kadoshim. So within the kodesh ha'kadoshim, so you put the covering on top of the ark. V'samto es ha'shulchan michutz l'paroches. So look how this pasuk reads. So you put the table outside the paroches. Yes, ha'menorah nochach ha'shulchan al tzela ha'mishkan teimana. Then you put the menorah opposite the table on the side of the Mishkan towards the south. And therefore the table you're putting on the north side. So you might say that this seems a little bit of an unusual way to phrase things. So we find by the end of the pasuk that the Shulchan is apparently on the north side. So why does the pasuk have to start telling us about putting the shulchan there without telling us where, and then having to repeat at the end what direction the shulchan is in, and then telling us a different word, titein, as opposed to visamta? So this is discussed. This was discussed by the Luska Rav, by the Oznayim Torah. And he suggests that there is a point here that's being made. There is a Gemara in Baba Basra, often quoted Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Chav Hei, where the Gemara says that somebody who wants Chachma, Harotz Lachkim, Yadrim, you should look to the south. And somebody who wants to become rich, he should look to the north. Riches are in the north, and Chachma is in the south. And that is based on this structure in the Mishkan, that you find that here you have the menorah and the shulchan. So the menorah is in the south, that's wisdom, and the shulchan, that's where your food comes from, so that's in the north. So therefore your wealth is in the north, and your wisdom is in the south. The Shechter often comments that somebody said, in America, it turned out the opposite, because all the great universities were in the north at some point in time, and all the wealthy industry at that point in time was in the south, so in America it was the opposite. If you want money, you go to the south. If you want intellect, you go to the north. But the Gemara suggests that it should be the other way around, that if you look in the Mishkan, so you see that Chachma is going to come from the south, and wealth from the north. So the Zayin Torah suggests that what this pasuk is trying to talk to us about is the integrity of the Ruchnius and the Gashmius. That we know that we need each other, that we say, Emein Kemach in Torah, that if we don't have, certainly could be our slogan nowadays also, if we don't have If we don't have the bread tarte mashma, that it all fits, you know, actual bread or bread as it connotes the funds. So if you don't have the bread, so then you don't have the Torah. But really, we know it's also the other way around also, that in Torah, in kemach. So we need the physicality to make our spirituality exist in order to have a structure for that. But our physicality doesn't mean anything unless it's integrated with our spirituality, unless it's connected to the Torah, it's not going to have any meaning for us. So therefore, we really need the both. But we recognize, says the Litzker Rav, that human beings have a hard time perceiving how they're both equally important. Now, we know that you have to have Kemach to have Torah, but the equally important idea of being Torah and Kemach, that human beings don't see as important. They may eventually come to work that in also, but to see that as an absolute, the same way in Kemach and Torah, they don't really appreciate that. So as a recognition of this human perception, so we say, yeah, it's okay, so you have to set up your building first. So yeah, so you put the shulchan down, the samta, yes, that's a physical necessity. The samta sa shulchan mechutz leparochas. Yes, ha-menorah nocha ha-shulchan, but then you understand also that you need the menorah, al-tzela ha-mishkan, kiman. And if you have that integration, if you have that menorah that's going to be the source of chachma, is going to represent chachma, all integrated, so then you'll succeed. So how will you succeed? Ha-shulchan titein al-tzela tzafon. That the table will indeed be in the north, like the Gemara is suggesting. You will indeed find your riches from the north. And titein, he understands, if this is the case, that nesina is a positive language, while sima could go either way. Sima could be good or bad. So first, put down the table. And that could go well or could not go well. But if you integrate it with the Torah, so then your shulchan will be in the north, and it will be a nesina. It will be a source of positivity. This idea you find similarly in other places. So Rav Hirsch, we mentioned, we come back to his point earlier, that he talks about the idea of the shittim. So the shittim are wood that is covered with gold, and they surround all of this structure, all of this core element of the Mishkan. So he suggests, and again, I would recommend that you read everything inside, because there was quite a bit to say about this, but that the idea is that when you put the Torah at the core of your resources, so wood and gold represent, from two different extremes, our basic resources, wood, the basic building component of so much of life, and gold, that which represents wealth, but also the enhancement of that which is a building block. So if you want that to succeed, if the Torah is absorbed within it, if it surrounds the Torah, so to speak, so then that's going to be a successful image. He also suggests that the idea of dividing off the Aron HaEdus and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is to say that ultimately everything comes out of there, and that we shouldn't let these elements of the Gashmius of the world, as important as they are, that can't dictate into the Aron HaEdus, and therefore there has to be a separation for that purpose. The Tanchuma has a comment which is a little bit along these lines. The Tanchuma notes that the menorah, which is now outside, outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, outside of the Parochas, so that's in order to make the point that the menorah symbolizes light, but we shouldn't think that the Torah needs a physical light in order for it to have its chachma. So it's symbolic, but the Torah itself is able to be on the other side of the curtain. It doesn't need to actually be near the menorah in order for it to shine its light. And that, as the Nevi'im predict, that even when there is great darkness in the world, so the light of Torah is going to shine through on its own. It doesn't need external physical light in order for it to shine. Rashi over here, when describing this whole setup, so Rashi has a comment that the idea is apparently then you have the Shulchan on one side and you have the Menorah on the other side, so you have the Mizbeach in the middle. So you have Mizbeach the Emsa. So the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this. This is in Or Chaim Simon Chaf Ches, where he writes that this shows you that you have to have the bima and the emsa of the shul. That when you have a shul, so the shul is modeled after the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, just like the Mizbeach is in the middle, so too the bima should be in the middle. And he goes on to say, and this is also expanded upon in the tshuva by his son, Miksav Sofer, and Siman Yuches, he talks about this at great length also. And he goes on to say that it makes sense that the bima should be in the middle, because we read the Torah on the bima, and that's where we read about the karbanos. And like we said before, that reading about the karbanos is a expression of bringing the karbanos. So nowadays, we don't actually bring the karbanos, so we read about them instead. So it used to be that was done on the Mizbeach. So instead of doing that, we read the Torah on the bima, which is in the middle. So this was a big, big fight at the time, because this was part of the war against reform, that one of the changes that was being brought about was that the churches should be the model more, and that instead of having a bima b'emsa, so you have a stage in the front. So whether or not inherently this idea of bima b'emsa is such a crucial aspect, pure halachic sense, it became certainly a very major component of the debate, and similar in a sense to the mechitza, which could also be modeled after parts of this parasha, but that the idea that the bima had to be in the middle became a very fundamental pillar, and the Chassam Sofer and others were at the forefront of pushing for this. And that's what's discussed here in the Paras Yosef. He talks about this and talks about how there is a whole literature behind the power of Minhag, about how things developed in the Beis HaKnesses and how that was emphasized and defended. And that's part of what's playing out here as well. Hi.
Who is
Paras Yosef? Paras Yosef is a beautiful sefer that was written, in a sense, by two people. So there's a sefer, Paras Yosef, which was written about 100-something years ago by Yosef Patsanovsky, which is a beautiful, beautiful sefer, where he just has like a smorgasbord of all kinds of things. He talks about halachic points, he talks about lamdusha points, he talks about drush, he talks about stories, every kind of thing you want. Sorry?
Dikduk,
every kind of anything, nothing is outside his interests. So it's a wonderful sefer. But the Paras Yosef that we have only goes up to Vayikra. So we have Bereishis Shmos and Vayikra. So in this door, there is a very incredibly prolific Talmud Chacham, whose name is Rabbi David Mandelbaum, who's written many, many Sfarim, Sfarim of his own, Sfarim of others, so a lot of Sfarim of others that he brought to print with more footnotes and things like that. So he adopted the Paras Yosef as well, and he came out with the Paras Yosef HaChadosh. So the Paras Yosef HaChadosh, he replaced, or he filled in, the Bamidbar and Dvarim volumes that didn't exist in the original set. He wrote it in the same style. He writes, HaDerech Shasalal HaParis Yosef, meaning that's, again, incredibly comprehensive, all kinds of different things. But because he's writing in this generation, it's even more comprehensive. So he'll quote from journals, and he'll quote from modern Sfarim, contemporary Sfarim, and tell stories about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he'll have a very updated approach of the same kind of style of Paras Yosef. And he also released a updated version of the first three volumes. So you can get now in these big blue volumes the Paras Yosef HaChadosh and the Paras Yosef HaShalem. So now the whole thing is 10 volumes. He's got two volumes for every Chumash, and that's much more detail, and so beautiful sefer, so it's a very nice sefer to have. And then they basically became a franchise, so now you can get Paras Yosef. They have a volume also on the Haggadah, and a volume on the Rosh Hashanah, and a volume on Hanukkah. Not all those written by Mandelbaum, some of it by others, but basically it became kind of a franchise for this very comprehensive approach to dealing with things and talking about all kinds of different drachim and learning and bringing it all under one roof. So it started off as a Sefer and Chumash, and now you can get volumes of that title on other things, written by at least two contemporary Chumash Chachamim. So what he started is a very beautiful work. He has, in his introduction, the whole Sefer is worth reading, but in the introduction it's particularly interesting because he has this rhyming introduction. So if you read it out loud, you'll realize it's a long introduction, not like a short thing, but if you read the whole thing, you see the rhymes. It's a fascinating skill. And he has a vort there in the introduction, which the Tarut Mima has also in his Sefer on Chumash. The Sefer on the Siddur. The Tarut Mima is a Sefer on the Siddur called the Baruch Shemar. So if you open up the beginning of the Baruch Shemar, there's a vort there which the Paras Yosef says in his Lakdamah, the same thing, that they ask a stira. It's not the kind of stira that keeps you up at night, it's the kind of stira you ask if you have an answer. That the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, say Zahu Chacham, Alomed Mikol Adam. Where does it need to be a Chacham? You learn from everyone. So, but the Gemara says in Talmud something else. Stira, Zahu Chacham, Haroes Hanovad, which we normally translate as someone who's able to anticipate what the future is going to bring. Somebody who's able to see what's coming. So that's Chacham. So it's a Stira. So which one is the Chacham? So I would probably think it's not such a stira. They're both elements of Chachma. But both the Torah Tamim and the Paras Yosef, so they assume you have to be miyashi of this. And they both suggest that it doesn't mean that Harava Sanolad should be interpreted as anticipating the future, as we normally translate it. But it means Harava Sanolad, that sometimes people are so focused on who came up with an idea, who said it. So they look so much at the moilid, they look so much at the one who created the idea, they don't give proper assessment to the idea itself. So really, if you want to be a chacham, so don't focus so much on the moilid, focus on the nolad. Look at the product, look at what was made, and decide whether it's chachma or not. So the Torah Tamima has this in the beginning of the Siddur, because we start every day, we say, Ma Tovu Alef Yaakov, which is a citation from Bilam, which is a strange place to start our daily davening. So Marshall writes in the Tshuva, doesn't say it. So why should I quote Golem every day? So he doesn't say Matovu Alecha, but the widespread in Israel is to say Matovu. So why do we start our day quoting Bilam? So the Torah Tamima says this vort. He says we have a couple of halachas that we learn from Rishayim, and if it's Chachma, we'll accept it, and we'll take it anyway. So he gives a couple of examples, and he says this is one of them, so that's why Matovu. So Paras Yosef has the same vort. He says, gives a whole lot of dhamma, and it sounds like he was kind of beleaguered. He says, you know, you might not like me, but you should know that if you don't like me, you should like my sefer anyway, because the sefer has its own value, and you shouldn't dismiss it even if you don't like me. It's a whole poetic thing where he says, Amarti l'sefri, and people are going to come and attack me, so Amarti, I said to my sefer, Al tifachet mehem, don't be afraid of them, just know that you're valuable anyway, even if you don't like me. And it has this whole hakdama. So in a sense, he really applied the other sense of halomid mikol adam, because the whole sefer is about halomid mikol adam, because every single type of talmid chacham is in there. You have the chassidish rebbeis, and you have the poskim, and you have the darshanim, and you have everything else all included under one roof, and that's essentially what you find in the Paras Yosef. So I don't know if you're sorry you asked, but that's that's a little bit of background, and that's it. Hi.
I seem to remember that Baruch Shammai saying also something about, like, it's sweeter when it comes from somebody who doesn't like you than from
praise. That's praise. Another word, you know, yeah, that like it's easier for a friend to say that the pasuk like that. And it's easier for a friend to praise you than it is for an enemy, and then an enemy is going to count for more. That's also true. The other things, there's a different approach he has there. That the idea is lomid mikol adam, so you're lomid mikol adam because you're not worried so much about who they are, but you are focused on the content. So, for example, the idea of Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha, that we have, it's interesting because this, we'll come back to in a second, but Eim Arvin Simcha B'Simcha, so the Bavli learns that out from the Pasuk, Samachta L'Chagecha, V'lo B'Ishtecha. But the Yerushalmi learns that out from Lavan, that when Yaakov married Leah, and he thought he was marrying Rachel, so then afterwards he was told he could marry Rachel also, he has to work another 7 years, but he doesn't wait 7 years before marrying her, he marries her immediately and works for 7 years after that, but not actually immediately, Because the Torah says, 11 says, so wait out the week and then marry her. So why do you wait out a week? Because you don't want to have your Shabbat brachos intermingled. Ein Arvin Simcha B'Simcha. And Yerushalmi learns that, Ein Arvin Simcha B'Simcha, from there. So that's, again, a possible chachma being derived from Rishayim. It's also interesting in that point, I can't remember why this is, but for some reason, so if I'm encouraging you now to look at the Paras Yosef, so if you look at the Paras Yosef on this Aliyah, I didn't know, I just looked at it quickly, for some reason he brings in, through a tangent, the whole question of whether it's appropriate for younger siblings to be married off before the older siblings. So that's also a discussion in Poskim. Moshe Feinstein has a truth about that, where he says it's not a problem. But before that, there was a truth in the Avnei Chayfetz. It was written by Rav Aaron Levine, the grandfather of Dr. Aaron Levine, who's here. So there he has a truth where he says, not so partial, it's okay. So this is also possibly a lesson from Lavan, right? Lavan says, that's not what we do here. We don't marry off. We're not going to marry you to Rachel before Leah, because we don't marry off the younger before the older. So to what extent do we care? To what extent do we care that that's the Chachma of Lavan? So this is a whole discussion, and that's a part of this idea of Halomi Vikalav. So if you're not yet, sorry you asked, I guess by now you probably are. So, okay, so this is a short aliyah, so we'll stop here and we'll daven mincha, and God willing, on Sunday, we will continue a little bit with our exploration into the power of Chazal, and take it from there. Tambi, it looks like you're close to consider. Okay.